I mean, I discovered it in my relationship patterns as well, that I learned relationships from movies. And I'm a 90s child, so I learned them from 90s and early 2000s romantic movies. And they don't work, those relationship patterns, you know, because I haven't seen that modeled. I haven't seen a good relationship around me. My parents were not close by any means. And I ran away to on-screen relationships as partly as escapism, but also partly to learn. Like I was learning how to be around other people by watching people on screen and watching these completely fabricated situations.
Welcome back to the Too Old for This Shit podcast. I'm your host, Angie Sorensen. If you're new here, welcome, welcome, welcome. So glad to have you here. If you're one of the oldies, thank you so much for still being here. The show wouldn't be what it is without you today. So thank you so much. So if you're an oldie, you already know this, but I'm just going to say it for the new ones. This is an interview-based podcast where you will find a wide range of topics and guests, such as doctors, sex workers, madams, women who escape Christian cults, scientists, psychotherapists, coaches, divorce lawyers, and so many more. I love doing this. And do you know what? I haven't actually asked this for a while, so let me just do a little plug. If you enjoy this, please subscribe or follow, rate and review it on the platform that you're listening from. Any of this really helps little independent podcasters like me just to get a chance to be heard by a few more people. So if you don't mind, that would really, really help me out. It will take you under a minute. Unless you're writing a really long review. Oh, also, only 5 stars, right? Nothing less. No. Okay, I can't tell you that. Okay. Anyway, just rate and review it. That would be amazing. Or follow, like, subscribe, you know, all the things. That would be super, super, super. So I am really hyped up because I've just come off the recording with Alex Mail, today's guest. And honestly, it's been a while since I've actually done a long, long chat with one of my guests. We stayed on for about 2 hours when you count like the pre-chat and then after the recording, the post-chat. And I haven't done this in a while. And I really enjoyed chatting with her. It really sort of just reminded me why I'm doing this. Not that any of the other ones weren't good. Of course not. Ugh, I'm going to get in trouble now. It's just that there was something about talking with Alex. There was this, I had prepared for the conversation, but there was also room for more of the flow of just see where the conversation takes us. And listening to her and exchanging a dialogue with her was just so, it just felt really good to my soul. And I'm really glad because I got to tell you, I had not slept. This is Sunday. We did this interview on a Sunday morning at 10 a.m. and I didn't sleep the night before. I just couldn't sleep. And then there was so much wind as well, but I just couldn't sleep. My head was all over. I was just overthinking things probably. And I was waking and I woke up and I was like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to get the energy? And I got the energy from just talking with her. And that's the energy that I really love when I do interviews, is that just this natural flow. It just feels so good, basically. And yeah, I can't wait for you to just listen to her and and dive into this. So I'm not even gonna do an intro. Like, I'm not gonna tell you what it's about. You will hear soon enough. I actually say it from up top when I introduce her. So I'm not gonna duplicate and waste your time. So let's just go straight into it. So please, without further ado, help me give a big warm welcome to Alex. Let's begin. Well, Alex, welcome back.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. I am so, so happy to be connecting with you again. You made such a big impression on your first episode, which came out in March 2021. It feels like a lifetime ago. It feels like a whole different... Yeah, it was mid-pandemic. And your episode was number 56. And it was called Pleasure and Orgasm or an Inside Job. Wow. So, yeah. So today we're going to talk about something quite different. And actually... the topic we're going to speak about today is something that you actually planted the seed already back then. And I'm not sure, I think it was after the interview, after we recorded, when we stayed chatting mm-hmm. after, just you and I, you mentioned about this already then. Yeah. And I wanted to talk about it. And somehow, you know, I'm only getting around to it now. But yeah. I'm glad that I am. So today, basically, in... a world where we increasingly are stuck to screens, from anything from your mobile to the silver screen, we are going to talk about how the media, Hollywood, celebrity culture condition our behaviors and how we can exercise more discernment so not to be so controlled or influenced by it. So before we dive in, Alex, please introduce yourself, where you live and what you do.
I'm so happy to be back. So I'm Alex Mill. By trade, I'm in the filmmaking industry. But when we met during the lockdown, the film industry shut down and I had no idea what else to do. And intimacy was something that I did on the side. It was a little side project during lockdown. But then ever since, I came back to London and I'm back in the industry. So this has been my background for over 14 years now. 12 of those have been spent as an assistant director, which is a logistical job. We're mainly dealing with schedules and communication and people management and facilitating communication. And I have to be honest, like after lockdown, when I came back, because I spent a year and a half in Ibiza, away from the industry, away from this world. And when I came back to London and I came back to the industry, I had a fear because I did not want to come back to the same person that I was. So ever since, I'm very critically reevaluating my relationship to the industry and how it's impacting me and the larger impact that it has on human beings.
Mm-hmm. You seem to already have so much awareness back then. What is it that you mean that you were worried to come back to the same person?
So the reason why I left London is because in 2019, I properly had a meltdown.
Yeah.
I just felt like that London is too much for me. The industry is too much for me. I was working way too long hours for practically not enough money.
Because... Oh, honey, I hear you. Yes. Oh. Sorry, I'm like, I hear you right now.
The weird thing is that we're so spoiled in film because you're always going to compare yourself to other people. And in a tight-knit industry, I was comparing myself to other people in my industry, my field, my department. And, you know, like genuinely, if I compare myself to other jobs in other industries, I earn way more. I have a way better lifestyle. I have a way better treatment. Probably I work longer hours, but like that's just the nature of it. But when I started to compare myself to people within the industry, I just started to feel like I'm grinding for no good reason and I'm not really getting forward. So I was like, okay, I need to take a step back. Do I still want to do this? And so before I went away, I started becoming more and more anxious and I don't want to say aggressive, but just... So ADing is a communication-based job, and I started to be shouty on set, and I did not like myself, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I realized that I'm increasingly more and more masculine. Mm-hmm. And Ibiza, a beautiful, gorgeous island on the Mediterranean, and I just started being more feminine, and I was really missing that side of me. So I was like, how can I bring this back, the spirit of what I've been doing, all the self-development that I went through, all the soul searching that I've put myself through, how can I bring the essence of back into the job that I know how to do and back to the day-to-day? And then in 2021, when I came back, the second job that I did was a job that profoundly shaped the way that I look at myself and the way that I look at the industry, because it was one of the most soulful, lovely, mindful sets that I've ever been on. And I think I started to experiment with a different way of showing up and speaking to people and thinking about the job. And I think that shaped in 2021. And ever since, I'm a different person on set and in life as well.
Yeah, you know, I love that. Sometimes that's what you need, isn't it? Like something that's muddled. Which actually is going to be quite relevant as well to today's topic. But like to see a different behavior being modeled in front of you. So like you said, on set, and I can understand why you'd feel tired. I mean, you know, I get the whole, like London can be feel really hard. I mean, I'm in full-time corporate work now, but that's not what I want to do. It's a means to an end.
Yeah.
And I've been in that for 3 years, and I'm at that point where I'm like, I don't like who I am at work. I mean, I'm not shouting or anything like that, but I would probably get fired, you know, because it's corporate, yeah. But, but I would, I just don't like the moods I'm in. I just don't like, there's a lot of, you know, office politics, and there's all this like navigation of all these different rules, but it boils down to the fact that that's a whole other conversation, but I'm not really home there. So, but yeah. I think, you know, when you are on film sets, and I used to do that years and years ago, I used to be like the script supervisor, continuity person. And so you on the set with the cameraman and the director, and you are like, you're the ones on the set the longest, you know, because you have to be there for the whole thing. And I remember it's really, really long hours. I mean, it's really long. I was really young as well, so I was fine, but I can understand why, you know, when we grow up as well, like, you know, those hours and the money is not necessarily good.
Exactly.
If you get paid at all. So, I didn't get paid because I was a student then, but I think, yeah, I can understand. And, you know, it's like keeping, if you're an AD, you have to keep all the cats in one room, and they just keep wanting to run away, I can imagine. So, of course, you start to lose it. But I'm glad to hear that it's changed and you sort of have a different experience. But because obviously you work in film and you're an assistant director, like how, before we get into today's topic about how it can really influence people to the worst, how do you know that what you do, that is not what you, I mean, since you work in films, like who's to say it's not what you do?
Yeah. As in, not what I do, as in?
Like, actually, do you want to get,
people.
Yeah, so actually, let's get into the topic first, because it'll make more sense then.
Okay.
So why do you think that Hollywood and celebrity culture influence and shape the beliefs and behaviors of the masses?
I mean, I discovered it in my relationship patterns as well, that I learned relationships from movies. And I'm a 90s child, so I learned them from 90s and early 2000s romantic movies. And they don't work, those relationship patterns, you know, because I haven't seen that modeled. I haven't seen a good relationship around me. My parents were not close by any means. And I ran away to on-screen relationships as partly as escapism, but also partly to learn. Like I was learning how to be around other people by watching people on screen and watching these completely fabricated situations. So the idea that everything has to have a happy ending, or until it has a happy ending, it's not over yet, it's not ingrained in my muscle memory. So it's films, hardly ever teach healthy conflict resolution or delayed gratification or a sense of not everything is going to go your way and the whole universe is not always conspiring to bring you the best possible outcome. It's the pipe dream of Hollywood because it makes for a good 90 minute to 2 hours movie. It's edited, it's compressed. Time is not realistic in movies. So often, especially around relationships, we have this sense of the way stories are built is that you have to have a conflict. You start with a conflict. So especially in romantic relationships, some people seek out conflict just because if there isn't a conflict, there cannot be that resolution, that cathartic feeling of, oh, coming back together or coming together after such a hurdle.
Yeah, and it's confusing those as well with passion, right? Yeah. And love.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so some people get conditioned on this idea that unless I have that intensity, unless I have, you know, unless we fight and then separate and then come back together, we're not a real couple or there isn't any passion.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear that completely.
That's not how life works. This is not real.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, because I know we're going to go into a bit more sort of like more like the alternative side of like, you know, of what people think of Hollywood, more on the fringe, right? So, but before we do that, like, I do actually want to sort of like even like reaffirm what you just said, because I even have, you know, therapists who have been here on the podcast say that what is portrayed, I mean, maybe they told me after or on the podcast, it's hard to recall like when was the conversation happened, but I know I've had that definitely a couple of therapists say that you know, the what is being portrayed in the Hollywood romantic movies is a toxic relationship. Yeah. And that was something I was told years ago. And now obviously you can see that a lot as well on, you know, social media where therapists, you know, they do like those short bites and they mention about that too. But yeah. I think it's like, it's true, but also even other things, right? Like you can even see things like what success or happiness is supposed to look like. You know, you have, you know, there's a lot of like, oh, the cool character who's like, you know, drinking nonstop, but somehow doesn't get drunk and still manages to be a superhero, right? I mean, that was one of my favorite sci-fi character, and I can't remember her name now. It's embarrassing, but she's one of those that has like superpowers, but she drinks constantly, but she can't get drunk because of her superpower, and she's super strong, right? I was like, oh, that's like hashtag goals. But you know, I thought she was so cool. But there's a lot of these, like, I mean, even if you look at the celebrity culture, right? For example, the Kardashians. Yeah. I mean, this is like. And I don't even think that's something they consciously know themselves as individuals. But like when you look at their bodies, how it's influenced young women now and all the surgeries they've had, I mean, they're not the same people as they were, you know, naturally. But like quite extreme. They've had a lot of stuff done. Mm. First of all, it always makes me think that's so painful. That must be so physically painful. But also mentally, like you just don't look at the same person after one in the mirror. Yeah. And I feel like what the Kardashians think it has done is that it's, you know, they've become really, really rich on their bodies, the surgeries, the sex tape. And, you know, we've seen like all these like young women going like younger and younger going for all these like interventions, right? Even teenagers, I've heard that apparently now paging kids as well, like, you know, kids who do those pageants, I don't know how you say, have Botox too. And I'm like, what? That can't be real. Like, who is the criminal injecting this into their faces, you know? But the thing is now, further down the line, and I don't know if it's related, and it may sound like a really big jump, but you have the explosion of OnlyFans.
Yeah.
And all it does is basically it's saying to people, nudity plus mass exposure equal money equal success. But you have also now women who, like, after 3 years, after I saw this headline, I don't know, again, I haven't checked it, but this woman who apparently was like number one on OnlyFans, very pretty, made apparently 67 million or more. I don't know. It's like an insane amount of money. Wow. After 3 years, and decided to resign now. I mean, retire.
Yeah.
And look, again, like, I also understand, like, I also am of the opinion, like, girl, get yours. Like, you may as well get paid. You know, it's very easy to judge or to look at it in a certain way because it's OnlyFans. But at the same time, you have, like, cohorts, you know, of individuals who will do that for free, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, at least the OnlyFans girl is getting paid and doesn't have to have sex.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. It's not a straight comparison, or I'm not saying that it's better or worse, but it's like, you know, there's a lot of hypocrisy, right? But I think in a way, this whole, you know, you had, what's the one before Hilton? She exploded too based on a sex tape, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I don't know what it must do to their psyches, you know, because it's like a virtual rape, you know, when people are watching your sex tape like that. An intimate moment, right? But so, I mean, there's a lot of stuff I think that may not seem like a straight line, but I think down the road has had an impact. And I don't see how OnlyFans would have happened if we hadn't glorified everything else first.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I mean, film has such, it's one of the only industries that is a complete amalgamation of other previous industries. It's not a straight line of development. So if you look at it from, it developed from theater for the performance side, theater actors, first of all, in the very beginning, it was only males who were allowed to be theater actors. Mm-hmm. So males were portraying female characters as well. Just imagine male on male action. That was the whole world. So that was condoned for that. Then after a while, when women were allowed to play roles as well, then whoever was a female actress was also considered a whore who's selling herself.
Yeah.
Then film in the 20th century came up together with the advertising industry. So just the idea that you can sell through a story. The advertising and the film industry completely cross-pollinated each other. The advertising industry learned from storytelling techniques, and film learned from sales. The whole birth of the internet culture absolutely blew up the porn industry. Before that, it was such a hurdle to get any kind of printed material or like even video material for a while that was even a little bit explicit. And now we have extreme close-ups of body parts of complete strangers at your fingertips for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So film is this very interesting animal that, you know, when you look at it from different sides, it's completely different things.
Well, I do find there's also like a red thread, right? Like, it's women being exploited. Because, yep. Like, you know, there's a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of free porn and those, and I know there's men in there too, so I'm not saying they're not being exploited either, but there's a bit of a different stigma, whether it's a man or a woman, I feel. Yeah. And there was this big scandal about this, and he's from Belgium. He made this really famous porn site. And I don't know if it's like Red Tube or one of those, I don't know which one it is, but it's one of those that basically like exploded. This was years ago. And what he did was that he would basically source his content. He would steal the content from existing, you know, from existing porn videos or whatever it was, and put them on there and monetize it. He made a fortune. Mm. None of the actors that he monetized on saw a penny from it.
Yeah.
And it was, I heard about this. It was in the maybe the other guy. They're competing a bit with each other. It's quite funny. But he's a bit like a Letheru style, but it's not Theroux. It's not Louis Theroux. It's the other one. Damn. Johnson. Okay. Anyway, I can't remember. But he did like a podcast around that. It was really interesting. It was kind of, it saddens me, you know, to like to think of like, you know, like these women not getting paid for what they're doing. And I know some of them, you know, I mean, it's just, yeah, some of them, they will think, oh yeah, no, it's exposure to do like a film for free. And then all of a sudden you have this guy from Belgium and then he's making a shit ton of money off him. It's just not right.
Yeah, this thing that when, so women, that's why there's the oldest, what's the phrase? What's the expression? The oldest
profession. Job in the world.
Yeah, the oldest profession. Yeah.
Yes.
Because for a very long time, that was women's only means of making money or getting power in society, that they exploited their own bodies because they were not offered any other opportunities in society. So we're still living down the legacy of that,
yes.
Where, you know, if you're not educated, if you don't have a good family background, if you have no connections, if you live in a remote part of the world, but you have a camera and solid internet access, you can monetize your own body.
Yeah, it's nothing's changed basically.
yeah, exactly. Basically,
but this is why also I think it's so important they actually do make the money. Yeah. I know this is funny. We're not going to be talking about porn, but now we're talking about porn actually. But it's just, it is why, like, I think it's so important that it gets, you know, that they can, that they're allowed to earn money from it, that it's legal to earn money from it, that they're not getting arrested because they are actually making money. But the weirdest thing is that I think it was Jim Jefferies who said it. He said, you know, how in the US, you know, how like, you know, there's a lot of puritanism right around sex.
Yeah.
And, but he said, but put a camera on it, all of a sudden it's legal. There's no issue.
You know?
Like she can be as young as you want. And I was like, oh my God, that's genius. I never thought of it. And it's like, you know, and it's true. It's like, you know, if the prostitute, no, but put a camera on it. Yeah, it's still frowned upon, but it's somehow it's not illegal anymore, you know? Yeah. So it's very, very strange because obviously if there's a camera on, it's easy to maybe to tax the person because they can't exactly deny that they weren't doing it.
It's such a synchronicity. I literally watched the Jim Jefferies bit like what a week ago. And and I did not know that in Australia, it's legal to have brothels. And it's a lot safer. Women actually get paid for it. Everybody is safe because you have bodyguards who are making sure that the girls are safe. Yeah. The girls are tested. So it's making sure that all the customers are safe. So yeah, once you legalize things and put regulations around it, it's, you know, it cuts down on sex trafficking and all sorts of diseases.
It keeps them so much more safe. I mean, I had a madam on the show. She was episode 105 called Madam. She's called Madam Bella Cummins.
Yeah.
I don't know if she liked the episode because I didn't hear from her after. But I would have enjoyed having her on. And she talks about that as well. It's like she basically has the... She has one of the only legal brothel in the US. I mean, she's in Nevada.
Yeah.
And she's the only true female owned brothel. Cause even the other ones who have they say it's female owned. She says that there's a man behind, but yeah, she talks about how, you know, the health as well of the she calls them courtesans.
Mm-hmm.
She decides to change the name, but, because there's so much stigma with the other words. But yeah, and it's all about keeping them safe, making sure they get paid. And even though it's legal, it's really hard for them to get a bank account. I mean, the thing is like some of them, it is their calling. Some of them, they actually really want to do that. So just let them do it, you know? It's just like, I don't know, you know. But somehow, you know, sex traffickers, I'm sure they have no issues like, you know, wiring or transferring money all over the world, you know, and getting, you know.
Yeah.
Getting that all of a sudden is fine. So it's very odd. But I think, you know, I mean, I wanted to touch a bit more on the other side of the film industry in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are things, you know, like, I mean, there are things that we saw, you know, for example, I'm thinking of 2020, right? And then you had all kinds of movie beforehand, like Contagion, for example.
Yeah.
Right. And it's funny, I never really sort of thought of these movies because I didn't really watch those movies much, or, you know, I wasn't so much into sci-fi and fantasy before the lockdown. Then I had tons of time in lockdown. I think it was about that time anyway that I got into sci-fi and stuff. But the thing is, I remember clearly that I was walking down, it was a Friday night, it was lockdown, so it was like completely quiet in an area where I live, which there is always, always movement. There's always people. It doesn't matter if it's a Sunday morning, Friday night, Monday morning, there's people. Like, it's a busy, busy place. And it was completely quiet. The only people I saw was like a group of like community officers. You know, they had a yellow vest on and stuff.
Yeah.
It was pitch dark and I was on my way to Lidl to get my shop. Mm-hmm. And then I saw at the bus stop this poster that said, you know, stay home, save lives, that kind of stuff. And I remember this is the first thought that came to my mind. I was like, I feel like I've seen this before. Like, this feels so familiar. And then I realized, oh my God, that's like every movie's about doomsday. Like, yeah, all this stuff. And I think, not necessarily to stay on the 2021, but I think in general, you know, there are like theories out there, you know, about how basically Hollywood is there to prime us to find new situations acceptable, whereas if there wasn't those movies before, we would maybe have been a little bit more, we wouldn't have been so complacent as a mass.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Hollywood has always had insider access. So it's being said that, you know, that might be a complete urban legend, but I believe it's true that the consumer technology that we have is about 20-25 years behind military inventions. And yes, all of it, or like most of it, comes down from the military.
Because I mean, the internet was the military thing, right? The internet, yeah, was used by the military before we had, yep, access, I think, for years. So yeah, yep. I mean, I believe that too, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the same thing. So there's the phrase military industrial complex. If you search for the phrase military entertainment complex, mm-hmm, people will find some very interesting connections. The US military is the largest and the best funded military of the entire world.
The US one?
The US, yeah, the US, mm-hmm, military. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they actively, so say,
oh, if, yeah, I see, because I just Googled it because you said it. And yeah, I can see the first thing that came up.
If we're talking about a country like North Korea or China or, dare I say, World War II Germany, if, mm-hmm, we think about the involvement of film and the film industry, the Western world would straight up say, this is outright propaganda. This is not okay. This is not, you know, they are using film as a tool for brainwashing the masses. If we're looking at the U.S. military's, or the, sorry, the U, yeah, the U.S. military's involvement in the film industry, every single movie where you see military equipment, whether that's a soldier and an army, whatever, a Navy SEAL, an Air Force pilot, any kind of guns, tanks, ships, those movies were sponsored by the military. And there is this symbiotic relationship between the military and Hollywood, because most of the third acts in big superhero movies or big sci-fi movies have some kind of battle at the heart of it, at the center of it. That battle was funded by the US military. And it's all for, and of course, with that funding comes a sort of creative control. So they have to portray the military in a certain light. There were movies, I think it was definitely Independence Day, the movie Battleship, even with Captain America, one of the X-Men movies. They had on their official movie website, they had a link to direct military recruitment, whether that's Navy or Air Force or
really?
Army.
I did. Yep. No way. Yep. What?
Yep.
I'll have to check that. That's crazy. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was Battleship, where I think when you typed in like Battleship the movie or something like that .com, that was straight up an army recruitment website. Sorry, that was probably Navy because it was ship. Yeah. Mm-mm. And it's all a a jazzy, glossy advertising form of propaganda. If it happens in a part of the world, in a side of the world that is thought about as totalitarian, then we would straight up say, this is propaganda, this is not okay. If it's happening in a democratic country, we're just like, well, yeah, it's sponsorship, it's funding, it's still propaganda.
I mean, it's all about the lens you wear, right? So, because I think, you know, I mean, military to us is military, right? So let's say if it's an ally country or, you know, an ally nation, we think of them as military. And of course, let's say if all of a sudden a tsunami hit London, I'd want that military from wherever it's coming from to come and save us. I don't care where you're from. I'm like, come and get us out. You know what I mean? Like all of a sudden, they're like the savior. And, you know, and I think the individuals in the military don't, they actually want to, I mean, maybe not all, but I know some people for sure are there because they want to help others. But I think some people do it because it's a means to an end. And some people do it because it's their passion. They really want to help. And I don't know about the rest, right? I don't know everybody. I do not know the military. But so the reason why I'm saying that is it's not an attack on the individual. But I think in terms of the, how do you call it? The institution.
Yeah.
Is that, so we see them as military when it's an ally. Yeah. But if they are from a nation that is known as to be an enemy state, then all of a sudden it's terrorist, right? Because those same groups, those two groups are the same. They're both having their weapons. They're both in their military gear. Some, you know, better gear than others, but they're still the same. They're still out there bombing, shooting. They're doing the same action at the end of the day. They're performing the same action. So if you are in an enemy state, but you are just, you know, a young family trying to make your ends meet and you were born there, I mean, you have nothing to do with the person who is in charge that everybody else hates or seem to think is evil or is evil. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you're still the one who then see those, that military come to your village and, you know, do all kinds of horrible things. That's not all of a sudden, that's not a savior. That's a monster that you're looking at. And so I think, yeah, like you said, it makes sense that there's a bit of propaganda because of course we have to fund the military, right? Tax money goes into it.
Yeah.
And so if we are being told, you know, oh, by the way, a big chunk of your tax money or a certain chunk of your tax money is going to pay terrorists, I think people may have a different stand on it. You may see people marching down the street a bit more or at least not agreeing as much. Yeah. So I think, like you said, it is true. Like they always look like the heroes and the good guys, but they're the good guys to us. They're not the good guys to the others.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So next year I'm going to shoot a film that is loosely based on the impact of the Vietnam War. So right now I'm watching a good 10-hour documentary on the Vietnam War.
Oof, and that's intense.
And it's absolutely mind-blowing how, you know, one country can just march over to another country and say that I'm occupying you from now on just because I have the guns and you don't.
Yeah.
And the people of that country have literally no say over being plummeted and bombed.
Yeah.
So it's a very one-sided argument based on, you know, who's got the bigger guns.
Yeah, and it's all hypocritical, right? Because we do it, but then when others do it, they're the worst people in the world.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that to me, that's why I'm like a little bit like just own up to it. Just say you're being a piece of shit and you're out there because you have resources that you want or it's a geopolitical interesting area. Yeah. And that's why you're getting involved. But don't tell me that that person is evil when we've seen you do it over and over and over again. That's the bit that I find that's not palatable to me.
Yeah. We talked about film coming from theater and everything. Media. Media is a bastard little child of advertising and filmmaking. And you would think that in a free country, the press is free, that's not the case.
Oh, it's not the case at all. I mean, we know now you can't say anything and you know, without the fear of getting cancelled.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the largest news channels are all controlled by the same people or the same company. How is that free? How is that non-biased?
Yeah. I mean, have you heard of Yuval Noah Harari?
Yeah, I have.
Right. His job title is, he's a medieval historian, Israeli medieval historian. That's his job title, right? But he's featured on the World Economic Forum. You know, he's taken very seriously everywhere. And he said something very interesting. And I actually wrote it down. I hope I wrote it down right. But he basically said, and I don't know when it was, but I don't think it's that long ago. He said, humans are now hackable animals. It's on CNN, I think you can see it.
Yeah.
Humans are now hackable animals. It means to understand that human better than it knows itself. Before, it was only possible on an individual level, like, you know, a parent's, you know, they will know you better until a certain age, right? After a certain age, you have a mystery about you, right? But now it's on a massive scale. And he says, like, it's corporations, is governments that know you better. And I think that's a little bit of that I want to sort of get into, because, you know, now with the social media and now with all the algorithm, I mean, if I look at hair products, I've started to lose my hair again a little bit. And so I've started, obviously my search is showing that, and what I stop in my scroll is showing that. Oh my God, you would think that everyone is selling a program on how to not lose your hair. You know, it's everywhere. Like, they just keep feeding you the same stuff. But the thing is, it's just like, the thing is with the hackable humans, I find that really an interesting word that he used. And I mean, I don't like it because it's uncomfortable, but I think it's very true in a sense, because we're very impressionable. So, you know, if you take the example of the news that we were just talking about, in the news, they are telling you this is real. They're showing you a scene. There you go. They're showing you footage of a war zone. Yeah. And it's horrific. It'll give you nightmare, or it'll make you start to cry. It's really, like, it really is horrific to watch that. And then you'd go to a movie and you watch The Edge of Tomorrow, right? Which is like a war sci-fi thing. Anyway, you'd watch like a war movie, for example. And they tell you this is fake. It's a movie. They're all actors.
Yeah.
The feeling that you're getting is pretty much the same. Like, it's like, oh my God, like, you know, obviously, you know, it's entertainment, so there's a bit of a levity around it. But the only difference between the two is that one is telling you it's news. The other one, you bought a ticket or you downloaded it online and it's telling you it's fake.
Yeah.
So I think, to me, that, I don't know if that's what he meant, but I feel that's also a little bit of that hackable, impressionable, manipulative, a malleable human, right, that we are. And I think this is also why I really wanted to speak with you today, because I really want to get some of, you know, we're going to go into your insights into how we can actually have a bit more sovereignty, especially in this world that's moving so, so fast with all the AI, the deep fake. And listen, I use AI, I use ChatGPT. So, you know, I think last year I was like, oh my God, ChatGPT, no way. And now I'm like, yeah, I'm using it. So, you know, the line keeps being pushed. But this is something else that Yuval Noah said, and then I want to hear your thoughts. But he said, so it's the same guy, Yuval Noah Harari. He says, like, authority is moving from us to government, corporate algorithms, to decide almost everything about our lives. So he says, if you apply for a loan, apply for a job, looking at what to study, who to marry, it's all decided by the algorithm. Right. I mean, you look at the dating apps, like who are they putting in front of you? You know, and it feels very much like a dystopian future in movies, right? So I think that's where the priming comes in to me, right? And then he said something actually that gave me chill down my spine. And this is, again, this is from a very, you know, a person that's taken very seriously. He says, you know, the government can actually, if so he was talking about this biometric bracelet. I don't know if you mentioned that some governments already use it around the world, but it will basically be a bracelet that can know how you feel. I mean, now we have this already with the heartbeat, right? It can tell you how fast your heartbeat is going, how well you're sleeping. Like there's a monitoring that you can actually have about you in the world in some way, right? So he says, like, if there's a biometric bracelet that knows how you feel, this is going to move way beyond George Orwell's 1984. If in the future we have this kind of biometric bracelet, let's say if you have like a dictatorship and you cannot say anything bad about the leader and there is a speech that everyone has to tune in on their little screen to listen to, you may be smiling and clapping, but the bracelet knows you're angry.
Yeah.
See, that's where... I mean, that's where it gets a bit chilly. And that's Yuval Noah Harari who said that. How do you feel about that?
There was a documentary that went famous called The Social Dilemma, which, you know...
Oh, my God, I love it. Yes.
But then there's a newer version of the same animal. It's also a Netflix documentary called Buy Now. It's a similar structure. So in the Social Dilemma, social media company employees came out against their previous companies. Buy Now does the same thing with companies like Amazon, Apple. So it's like ex-Amazon employees coming out against Amazon. And the whole how the buying algorithm is or has been by these very people very fine-tuned based on mass data so that they can hack the human animal, they can hack the human brain, and they would, you know, in these they would test things like where do you place an ad or where do you place a button on the screen, what color are you using, what shade are you using. And because the data input was so large, and that's what AI is brilliant at, that it has such a computational power and computational speed that it would take a human being ages to do the same amount of analysis or the same amount of data gathering. And AI can just do that in a blink of an eye. And based on that data, they were perfecting their websites and their frictionless mechanisms so people wouldn't think, they would act on instinct, on urges, on needs, and they would hack the biochemistry. They would give you these dopamine hits so that you want to do more, you want to buy more, you want to engage more, you want to spend more time on the screen. And there's a science to it. We are hackable animals.
100%. We're so predictable, it's sad.
Yeah.
It really is sad. And you know, I just wanted, just for transparency, I have actually started to use Facebook ads a few months ago because I have, you know, a membership to help others how to create their own podcast. And you know, I try to grow organically, and oh my God, I'm not a marketing person, so ask me to grow organically, I'm like, what? So I have to keep posting every day, and I can't do that. I'm tired. I just, like, you know, it's not like I'm not the marketing person. So I do use Facebook ads. And of course they are tracking. They must be tracking people because, you know, I put in, you know, interests, what they have for interest, you know. If they have a small business, that kind of stuff, right? Because it has to be people that can help, for example. Creatives and so on. So I think, I just want to be completely transparent. I use Facebook ads. So, you know, I'm also part of the problem. And it's funny because it's like, it's weird because it's also at some point you're like, I kind of also have to like make shit work for me, you know? Like sometimes it's like you have to, maybe you don't have to, but sometimes there are things that you sort of do, you know. I think Facebook ads, I think in and of itself, I probably think it's a terrible thing, really. But because, you know, when you're a user and you see all these ads pop up, it's so fucking annoying. And they obviously track, you know, like for me, like sometimes, like I said about the hair loss, it's like all of a sudden, like that's all I get. And I'm like, Jesus, you know, enough. So, you know, but I'm part of the problem because I'm also using Facebook ads on and off, right? So, but yeah, definitely hackable animals.
The thing is, and we touched upon it with, you know, with the porn industry or with military recruitment, that there can be engineered situations because they're not always natural, like politically engineered or economically engineered. One of my favorite books is The Confessions of an Economic Hitman. There are jobs, there are people employed so that they would collapse the economies of certain countries so that other countries can literally absorb them. So there are situations, engineered situations, when people literally don't have another choice, or, you know, or it's a choice between starvation or a very low quality of life versus using certain tools.
Oh, yeah, it's a very real thing. I mean, it's a very real thing. I think they, I mean, that is one of the things they're probably thinking of doing to China.
Yeah. Oh, like the social credit system already exists in China.
Yeah, but I think other countries wanting to do that to China.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's such, I mean, it's such a powerful economy and we buy everything from them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, our government is like, oh, China is the big bad wolf. It's like, but you keep doing business with them. Like, which one is it? Like, I don't know. Like, you know, it's like me using Facebook ads, but on a much bigger scale. It's like, it's like, you can't keep saying that they're bad and then putting all their products in our shop so that we have no choice but to buy it.
Yeah.
Unless we want to go super premium, and that's only people who can afford to buy, you know, maybe like an Italian pan, Italian this, it, you know, French this. Yeah. Like, if it's made in China, usually it's cheaper. So, you know, but obviously that also has another, that's double-edged sword, right? Because if we start buying from them,
exactly,
and, you know, the governments could just decide to do that, it would be pretty mean to the Chinese people.
I mean, that's what Amazon did. It was a book sales shop originally.
Yeah, that's true.
It only sold books, and then it started absorbing book sales, and then it realized that, oh, I have the potential to grow, and it just kept growing.
It's a big monster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I use it too.
Like, yeah. It's convenient.
Yeah, it's convenient. It really is convenient. But then again, it's like, when you think about it, it does feel like this whole thing, you know, like the reason why it's convenient is because we're tired. We don't, if we go to the shop, we have to walk quite a while. We have to go to several shops, and the shops can be sometimes busy. It makes you exhausted. You may have done like a 50, 60 hour work week. You get on the tube. Everything is exhausting. So now it becomes the society of convenience. But do we get that much joy of being, you know, everything is convenient. It's true. You can order in, you can order your breakfast, lunch, dinner. I mean, it'd be very expensive if you did that. But like, you know, you could eventually just do that every day if you wanted to never leave your house.
Yeah.
Or just go to work, come home, get everything delivered to your door. And on top of that, if you have children, you're even more strapped for time and money. And so if you can get it cheap on Amazon, if you can get it delivered like an hour ago, because it has to be so fast, you know, can you deliver it yesterday, please? Yeah. You know, it's like, I can see how it's all enablement, right?
Yeah.
We are enabling it. They are enabling us because they are then, you know, now Amazon, you can order your grocery shopping and probably more other things too, but
Or, you know, simply just like I have a very specific diet just because I'm sensitive to a lot of food items. So physically, my only choice is to go to a supplier who has the things available that I need, because the corner shop doesn't have it. The superstore doesn't have it. Any physical store around me does not have it. Mm-hmm. So my only choice is to go to the place that has it.
Is that Amazon?
Yeah. Well, it's a mixture of Amazon and eBay. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I don't even know how people manage to keep stores open nowadays. It must be so expensive because everyone's going online.
Yeah.
You know, I had a note here, and I sort of like just wanted to, maybe we passed that subject a little bit, but it's about the movies, and I thought, wait, I've got to run this by you. So you know how we're talking about the priming and the whole, the big monster complex that Hollywood movies are, and I heard some, I don't know if it's Miri AF. I don't know if you heard of her.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, Miri AF. So she's a writer, and she talks a lot about the state of society. Some of the stuff when I read, I'm like, it's too much for me. That's like too much. I mean, it goes quite deep into conspiracies.
Okay.
But some of the stuff that she says is actually quite, you know, interesting. And it's always interesting to hear how, you know, someone, like the way someone else is thinking of things, differently to me. And then some stuff that I find useful, I keep, and the others I don't. But so I don't know if it's her. I've got a feeling it may have been from her. I think it's from her. But you know how with the movies, right? So, you know, so I love alien movies. not the alien movie, not aliens. I mean, I watched it when I was a kid. It was terrifying. But I'm talking about, like, you know, when there's like,
invasion,
or even like things like Paul. Have you seen Paul? It's a comedy one.
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
And they talk about the CIA being behind and stuff, right? So,
yeah.
But yeah, so when that could also be one way of keeping us malleable in a way. So, for example, this is what she said: like, if something is depicted in movies, like aliens, for example, right? So it could be aliens or poisoning through our water or anything like that, right? That seems to be on the fringe, like crazy talk. But it's depicted in a movie, it's entertainment, we enjoy watching it. It's a good way, it's like hiding in plain sight. It's a good way to then, if someone say, do you know what? I saw something really weird the other day, like I'm sure it was a gray or like it was something up in the sky. It's easy for other people to dismiss them and say, you watch too many movies.
Yeah. So funny enough, two films come to my mind. One is, I think it was a 2012 movie called Congress with Robin Wright. And Robin Wright plays herself as Robin Wright, the actress.
I love her, by the way.
And the whole movie is about her. It's like a blend of her real life actress persona and the fictional feelings of, she feels like that she's growing too old and she's not relevant anymore. So there's a company who buys her image and then they can use her image the way they want to. The first half of the film is genius. The second half of the film is not that much. But the idea of an actress's image can be bought and then digitally or virtually recreated is now a reality. That's what
100%.
That's what we were striking about last year. That's what stopped the whole industry. And it was back in a 2012 movie. And you know, now it's a reality.
Like Contagion.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my new latest fear, when I saw that, I'm like, we are heading to a society that I'm not sure that I want to participate in anymore. In the latest James Bond movie, or I should say, you know, it's going to date. It's not always going to be the latest. The last Daniel Craig James Bond movie, when he dies, No Time to Die, one of the scenes involves a biological weapon that is specifically tuned to the individual because, because they use DNA information or gene information. And they can target, so when a weapon is detonated in the room, it still can only impact the person whose gene sequence is it was developed on. That technology is frightening, and in probably 20 years, it's going to be mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's just like, we have, this made me think of two things. One is like, I'm going to say, so I don't forget, like the series Colony. But the thing with, like, we have, I mean, that's actually one of the things why I have like not wanting to send my samples to, you know, History DNA or DNA Health. Although I may want to do it for DNA Health to find out about food, because I'm 46, I'm getting older, things aren't always working the same. And it's just like, but then I thought, why am I being so worried about that? Because effectively I've had my blood tested so many times. They have my DNA. They don't keep it, allegedly, but I mean, why would they want to keep it? I mean, but they may keep it that's a whole other conversation. But I mean, I'm not saying my blood is special. I'm just saying, like, they have the ability to actually sequence wherever they need if they wanted to, right? Yeah. Whether they have time or the money is completely different, because that's a whole other topic. But so anyway, what I was saying is that basically for years now, people have given their DNA. Well, they've given their sample for DNA sequencing, not to the full DNA sequencing, like doing your whole genome. That's a massive deal, and it will cost a lot of money and time. Like, it's not, if you send it to like who's my granddad, or have I got lost siblings, you know, or cousins, it's not the same, but it's still your DNA. And then there's different types of DNA testing you can do. But basically, when you think about the mixture of, we've given our samples for DNA sequencing to a small level, obviously. You have that. Then you have all our digital information. You know, our money is all digital. You have all our social media. You know, the algorithm know so much about you, like, which was said already in The Social Dilemma years and years ago.
Yeah.
There is so much information. And this makes me think of this. There's a scene in this series called Colony. It's on Netflix. If you haven't watched it,
no,
I highly recommend. Oh my God. Okay. I watched this in the lockdowns, and I was like, oh my God, that's like people now. I was just like, because it depicts, like, you have the resistance and you have the collaborators, right? A bit like, you know, the World War II movies, right? You have the collaborators and the resistance. And anyway, so it's a bit like that, but it's all about an outside. The setting is all about this extraterrestrial invasion, but you don't see them. But you see their drones, and, you know, and you see the technology. There's definitely something going on, and you have basically zero rights, and you're being watched all the time. It's just awful, awful, awful. But there's a scene in this series which is chilling. It's a guy who tries to be a whistleblower. He's a whistleblower. And this is way before the invasion. So you know how they go like back in time in movies like Pulp Fiction? Yeah. They go back in time, and there's this guy who's like trying to spread the word out, saying they are using, we have all our information up in the cloud ready to be used. And he says, like, there are things going on, like, he sees this things going on that's like off in government and whatnot. And he's like, this shit happening, basically, like, shit's gonna hit the fan. And he loses his wife, his job, like, no one's interested, right? He's like a pariah.
Yeah.
And obviously, what happens? We have this invasion, and the way they know so much about everybody is because they've basically hacked the cloud as well. So, I'm actually not divulging too much. There's still so much, like, that doesn't actually depict what the story is about, by the way. Even me saying this, that does not actually divulge why they're there, what's going on, any of that. That doesn't divulge any of that. Mm-hmm. But basically, the fact that he says that, this is an old series now. Let me see, Colony, Netflix. Let me just Google that, what year it was. 2016. Mm-hmm. 2016 to 2018. So even, let's say, if he said that in 2018, right? Still a few years back. And I'm just like, oh my God, it's so true. Like, everything is up there for anyone. It doesn't even have to be, you know, an outside civilization. If anyone has like a really good hacker and just want like to control another country, I mean, that's a very good way to go in.
Yeah.
There's so much information.
Yeah. I remember it was definitely in high school. So it was something around 2009 or something. Mm. Back then, YouTube was completely free and completely ad-free. And I remember listening to, I wanted to say a podcast, but back then podcasts weren't even a thing. It was probably something like an audiobook. I remember listening to a guy saying that, just watch, just wait. YouTube is free now, but the amount of information that they're gathering now, when they start to monetize it, it will go ballistic. And that's exactly what happened. So
yeah.
the same thing as with, and I remember another thing. That was around 2006, 2016, 2017, something like that. A friend of mine was working in SEO, search engine optimization. And she was mentioning that these games where you upload your picture and it gets distorted, or you know, you can put yourself as a character into a movie or something, or when you draw something, or when you use your handwriting, but it's all digital.
Mm-hmm.
Those games, or the quizzes, the which Disney princess you are, or which Harry Potter house you belong to.
Oh yeah, or what kind of witch you are. I get
yeah,
those ads.
Yes,
because clearly
those games
yeah.
were used as a training tool for early AI.
Oh, wait, yes.
Yeah.
Scott Sereboff was on this podcast, I think it was last year, and he talked about, even worse than that, the, you know, the catcher? You know,
yeah.
the security thing
yes.
says, you know, tell us what's the bridge, who's
yes.
what's the bike? That's basically training AI. We basically
yeah.
were free fucking workers
yes.
doing that. That was to train the
yeah.
AI.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
in and of itself, I'm okay with that, but tell me that that's what you're doing. What's the big, like, this is so misleading.
Yeah,
this is not
absolutely.
For security. There's just to train
yeah.
your AI. It has nothing yep. to do.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who works in the security and AI.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's telling me about that. But yeah.
So the same thing, I completely understand you being wary of giving your DNA or giving any form of bodily sample. Because you never know. These companies might build databases, and this right now, it might be a stealth database. Right now, they might not be sponsored by any big bad wolf. But maybe 20 years down the line, when they still have the records, when they still have the digital data, when they still have a full gene sequence of someone digitally, 20 years down the line, there might be somebody who comes along, gives you a big wad of cash, and says, can I use your data? I'm not going to tell you what it's for. I just need the data. You just get the money. And that might be used for all sorts of nefarious reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, I think, so here's the thing, right? Because, you know, we don't know. I mean, that's the whole game of manipulation, is that we don't know when we're being manipulated, just like with the news, you know, the angle, just like history is also written by the victors. You know,
yeah.
there's all kinds of, like, you know, that, you don't realize when you grow up and you go to school, maybe, like, you're being told, and you know, I drank the Kool-Aid, right? I was just like, oh yeah, of course, that's what happened. Now
yeah.
I'm like, I don't know. I'm opened. That's basically it. Now I'm just like, I don't even know sometimes what's real anymore.
Yeah.
I had someone, literally the guest before you are, who I interviewed, he's a flat earther.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily believe in the earth being flat, but I was like, I'm open now. I just want to hear, like, people's thoughts. Let's have this conversation. But I think that it's just, so that's the thing. We don't know when we're being manipulated. And I even think, to a certain extent, going down certain routes of conspiracies,
mm-hmm.
Some which, you know, could 100% be absolutely founded, and like that's really what's going on, and others are just, you know, theories, right? Like ideas, hypotheticals. But I think that even going down those routes, there's also a way of being manipulated, I think, right, within those circles. But I think, because we don't, a good manipulation is the one we don't see. So how, this is what I wanted to ask you. Like, how can we be more discerning and mindful about the media we consume, whether it's on your social media, the big screen, the news, documentaries, and so on? Like, how can we be more discerning and mindful so that, yeah, how can we do that? Because it's hard.
Funny thing is, what helped me both professionally and personally is to step away from the industry. And it's the same thing. It's do a digital detox, or for the very reason to build real life relationships. Because what we do nowadays very often is build extremely superficial relationships that are modeling relationships that we've seen on screen or in media or in advertising. And by spending time with a real person, real people, being in a community, being in a relationship, going through the day-to-day without much media consumption. Something starts to change when internally there is a sense, well, unless we are psychopaths and sociopaths, there is a sense of right and wrong. There is a sense of justice in all of us. There's a sense of what's okay to do, what's not okay to do, what feels good and what doesn't feel good. And that soul searching, that self-searching really helped me. And it was a long journey because I had a lot of conditioning around, especially relationships. When internally we start to clarify what are our values, what's important for us in life, what do we stand for, what are we willing to stand by even publicly, then we start to develop a sense of agency and power. And it's less and less easy to manipulate us once we know who we are. So I believe it all starts with understanding who is this human body who's carrying my consciousness and how can I relate to other people in a way that feels right to me, not something that I learned from others, something that I developed based on my own personal experience.
But I think to be able to get back to ourselves and just know when it's your intuition, your voice, your emotions versus other people's, you know, stress that you've absorbed from someone else or something in the consciousness in, you know, around you, you know, society that you're picking up on. Or, you know, it's like knowing what's the difference. And I think once you have, and it's not easy to do, but it's like, and I'm work in progress as well, but it's just like finding out who I am, what I stand for, when I know when something doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Versus when I'm just picking up something from the external too, right? And it's like when you watch the news or the media, you could absorb things too, right? I mean, I absorb things. That's why I don't watch the news. I absorb too much. I'm like, I can't watch all these war zones. It just really like, you know, and children and the hospitals and it's too much. I can't. Like, literally, I wouldn't be able to function.
Yeah.
Don't know. What do you think about that?
The thing with picking up feelings is that this is where there's a very fine line between woo-woo and science, because science is playing catch-up with a whole side of the human existence that we're just starting to understand scientifically, and myth or storytelling or folklore was talking about these things in metaphorical ways for ages. So we are bioelectric beings. Our brain and our heart emits electric signals, electromagnetic signals. And we talked about measuring biometrics. The body reacts physically, chemically, biologically to feelings and emotions. There's a very fine line between a feeling and a physiological reaction. You cannot tell whether you have a feeling because you're having a biological reaction or whether you're having a biological reaction because you're having a feeling. We talked about this even with, you know, video games or watching a fictional war story. The body doesn't know the difference. Mm-mm. The body doesn't know that this is, we don't have to be afraid. It's the mind telling the body that this is fictional, this is okay, you're safe, you're sitting in a chair, you're at home, this is, you know, you're not in the war zone. But the body can be scared. That's what horror movies are about. That's what jump scares are about. You know, the body reacts. Nevertheless, you still feel fear, you still feel excitement, you still feel elation and love just by watching other people feeling those things, or music or lighting or setting, exploiting those feelings. And scientifically, we're just starting to understand how perceptive the human being is. So even with, you know, people being sensitive to screens and sitting in front of a screen for the whole day, we are sitting in front of and engaging with a bio, sorry, not bio. Wouldn't it be nice? At some point it's going to be bio. An electromagnetic mm-hmm. machine.
Yeah.
Our electromagnetic body is interacting with another electromagnetic creature, being. We are going to exchange information and energy. And if that technological creature is not tuned to the natural biorhythms of the human body, then it might feel like we are drained. It might feel like that our eyes are tired, because literally the light signal and the electromagnetic signal that's coming from screens is not beneficial to the human body. So we are in conflict. We're in a biological conflict all day or most of the day.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's what they have, those EMF protection thing, right? They sell, like, to try and block some of those EMF that you get from laptop and everything like that, your mobiles. Some people believe in it, some don't. But yeah, I mean, I have a pendant, which is really old. I don't even know if it works anymore, but for when I work at the laptop. Yeah, because I think it's draining. It's not the same as when you're outside, where it's you're energized. You are, the electricity of the earth energizes you.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the laptop is not the same. You may feel entertainment and you get things done. You could earn money through it. It's all great, but you need to balance it out. So actually, this is probably a good time to circle back to the beginning, where you work in films, right? So how do you know that you're not contributing to all the stuff we were talking about?
See, so this is a huge, it's my dilemma. It's the film dilemma. This is my moral quandary, that I disagree with most of the stuff that I'm doing all throughout the day. And, you know, for me, it all comes down to human relationships, that I can still enjoy the people around me. I can still enjoy sometimes even the project that I'm making. Some scripts are not great, but some scripts are quite okay. But there are many things regarding the larger industry, the way things are run, the way our days are structured, sometimes the message that we put out, sometimes the characters that we put out. I very frequently disagree with it as me, as my human being, as my moral compass. And I realize maybe it's my conditioning, maybe it's a position that I was put in, maybe I'm just cornered. But I realize that I don't want to work in any other industry. This is the industry that I want to stay in for as long as I can.
It's a fun industry because it's always there's always projects. It's like you meet new people, new projects. Yeah. I mean, it's a fun industry to be in. It's interesting, right?
Yeah. And there's so much potential in it. And it really resonates with me for so many reasons. But so if I'm in an industry that I don't like, don't enjoy, what are my choices? Well, I could do nothing, stay at cruising altitude, still keep doing the same thing that I'm doing, and not enjoy my job for the rest of my life. And a lot of people actually do that. A lot of people suck it up, and this is just the way things are, and I'm not powerful enough. Or I will have to put myself in a powerful position where I actually have the ability to change things. And that's my choice now. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think you can also even, like, I mean, because there are films out there that are they have more of a benevolent intention and impact, right? So that's also, but they may not pay as much. I don't know how it works now. But, and obviously you can't always choose, right? It's like saying to an actor, but only do things that you believe in. And it's like, when you're big and famous, perhaps.
Yeah.
But when you're starting out, you just got to take any jobs you can. Yeah. And, And listen, you know, Alex, that was not to be mean to you, actually. I didn't actually think that you were going to say what you said, actually. I didn't even think that was it. I didn't even think that was the situation. I thought that you were actually doing films that was in alignment to you, right? So I didn't even realize. But just, you know, to even at the playing field, like, I mean, I'm doing a job that is it means to an end. I mean, it's funny because actually when I had the madam on, Madam Bella Cummins, you know, I said to her, well, I'm their bitch because I'm doing it for the money. I don't want to do it. She laughed. She was like, actually, that's very funny. She's like, that's very honest of you. But I was like, that's what I say to like to people. Yeah. I don't say it as much because I think it shocks people a bit too much. But I'm like, yeah, I'm what I am. I'm their bitch. I'm an assistant. It's not, you know, and it's in the corporate that I do have a lot of issues with. I don't, you know, just like what you and I were talking about now.
Yeah.
I don't think that I'm working for the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think, I mean, they're doing some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure. but I don't know. And there's a lot of it that goes over my head, right? It's way above my pay grade. It's also structured in a way so that you don't really know really what's going on.
Yeah.
On purpose, right? So, but no, I have a lot of issues and I'm trying to change that. You know, I'm trying to, that's why, I've, you know, I'm doing this and I've got, you know, membership and things like that. Like I'm trying to, yeah, to live the dream, you know, to do things that are congruent with how I see the world and feel and things that I feel good about.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I understand it's a luxury position to be able to do that when you do, right? It's not something that someone in Ukraine right now is thinking about or gives a shit about, right?
Yeah.
Or in other countries in the world, right? So, I think. Before I ask you the finishing thoughts, Alex, is there anything else that you'd like to share with us that before you plug all your stuff and ask you the finishing thoughts, like if there's anything else you'd like to share with us that I may not have given you the opportunity to say?
You know what, like my natural instinct is to balance it out. It's like, it's not all doom and gloom, it's fine. So maybe I will talk about, so the reason that actually keeps me in the industry and the reason that I'm choosing to become powerful instead of laying down and slowly giving up is because I believe in storytelling. So film is based on storytelling, but storytelling is very different. Storytelling is not industrialized. It's just a tool. It's a technique. So what I realized is that I don't like the film industry. I would love to change the film industry and have enough influence to do that change. But I love storytelling because the human mind is somehow wired for story structure. We look at ourselves, our relationships in terms of something that is very similar to how story conflict and story resolution works. Very basic example, trauma works in a way that we would recreate similar situations. We date the same person with a different face. We keep meeting people who reminds us of our mom and dad. It's the psyche's way of finishing unfinished business and completing a cycle, which is the very baseline of storytelling.
It's like the happy ending.
Yep. We're looking for the happy ending. And that's the brains and the human mind bodies natural way of conflict resolution, and we're seeking that in our day-to-day everyday life that existed way before the film industry existed.
Yeah I mean, that's how we held on to our history, right? It's through storytelling around the fire, nighttime, bedtime stories. But I think you're right. I think you can only make a change from within too, right? So I mean I think film has so much good potential, and there are a lot of movies who I said a lot. There was actually, I had a database from this yoga school I went to, Agama, which is obviously now completely controversial, but they had this film library online. Someone had this website If I find it, I'll send it to you. I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, where can I find something that doesn't make me, feel weird or, because a lot of the stuff is just, and I watch a lot of things. I've watched, and especially in the past, I've watched a lot of stuff. And I think I'm watching less now, but I'm trying to also, yeah, the same thing I realize, I just, things are just, yeah, it's almost like my body sort of like reacts. It's like, no. Well, my brain is like, no, I can't sit. It's just not doing that. I'm going to bed early. But yeah, there are a lot of things that are good, so there is a lot of good stuff to be done, and I think it's a great area to do good work, right, in film, because so many people love watching movies. I mean, it's one of the things that, or watching series, right? It's an easy way, digestible way for people to be entertained and learn. So I think that's a way to have an actually a very big impact. So no, I command you to carry on, because sometimes it's not so much it's just the strategy, right, that we need to look at. It's not so much because the medium is wrong. It's just the strategy, right? And so you can actually have your own strategy now. So I'm gonna ask you the two. Oh damn, I should have looked up. I should have found what you said last time. I may be able to. Oh, 1 second. Wait, hang on. Are you okay for time? I really want to find. Hang on. This is so important.
Till then, while you're finding it, can I say something more?
Oh, please. Yeah. Oh, please, please, please.
So then one more thing to mention. I am going to plug a movie. There is this animated movie recently came out called The Wild Robot. So it's about the power of storytelling. So the same way as the mind can be influenced and manipulated, the same technique, the same storytelling technique can be used for profound healing. The movie is a story about a robot who learns at an increasing speed and a little gosling who was hedged next to this robot. So this gosling looks at this robot as his mother. And it's about a mother-child relationship. Now, my relationship with my mother is famously what it is. It's non-existent at this point. And watching an animated movie about a mother and child relationship was so profoundly moving, I was bawling my eyes out. In a good way, it was healing, it was restoring. I was able to see a relationship that I never had. So it was like I very often feel like I'm a broken person or that I have missing bits and pieces. And my life's journey is all about finding the little puzzle pieces. That's what I'm on. I'm on a constant quest of I lost my shit. I'm losing my bits. Where are my bits? And I'm just going around looking for my missing bits and pieces. Those feelings that I was missing, the attention that I never got, or, just the relationships that I never had. And a movie can give that transformative experience to people. So that's the reason that keeps me in this industry, is because the same way as we have infinite power to do bad, we also have the infinite power to do good.
What life lesson do you wish you'd learned sooner?
Oh, I have to think about this. I think it will have to be something around relying on myself, but the first thing that came to my mind is I had one very significant period of my life when I started going deeper and deeper into addiction and depression and social anxiety. And there was a moment when it just viscerally clicked in that nobody is here to save
Nobody is here to save
me.
you or to say,
My life is
yeah.
my life. Save me. My life is my life. I have to take the ownership. If I'm not happy in my life, genuinely, I'm the only one who can effectively do something about it. There's a lot to say about community and other people and being resourceful and having help. All of us, we're social creatures. All of us need that kind of nutrition that we cannot give to ourselves. But it starts with being able to give me being able to give myself the feelings that I'm looking for, because it's not about the situation, it's about the internal feeling. So if I keep holding on to my miserable feelings, and sometimes the day job makes you miserable.
Yeah.
If I hold on to those miserable feelings, there's not a single human being on this planet who will be able to get me out of it. It's only going to be me changing my feelings.
Yeah, this is so good. Do you want to hear what you said last time?
Yes. Oh my God.
I found it. Look at me, AI. No, because I but I found it. Basically, it's in the same vicinity, basically.
Okay.
Let me just see here. About emotional neediness.
Mm.
You said that you had, that you had needy partners because you recognized the neediness in yourself.
Yeah.
And you mentioned about, you know, so I think this is in the same way as that, actually you finding your own happiness, you finding your own, like filling yourself up basically, right? Not needing it to come from an external source. And of course, it's always nice when someone says how gorgeous we are, but yeah. And how amazing we are. But I think it's true that once, if you can't do that for yourself, it's sometimes very hard to hear it from others.
I think other people can make you happier, but I don't think they can make you happy.
Yeah, they're like a cherry on the cake, right? They're like, they make everything just, they add this energy, right? They add this, if they're nice people, they can add a very nice energy to your life. And the second one, the last one is, what's something you no longer put up with?
So I'll circle back around to work. I started out, and that's naturally a stepping stone that unfortunately happens in a lot of creative industries, that people are asked to work for the portfolio, for the exposure. And I understand and appreciate when people don't have the money. And I'm not saying I never work for free, but I only do that to friends. I only do that with people that I like, because it's something that I'm doing as an act of kindness, as an act of friendship. But I do not tolerate people anymore who don't pay people properly for the hours that they work, for the actual work that they put in, and pay them at a rate, at a market rate, at an industry rate. So it's not something that people made up, that I think this is what you're worth. We have such complicated market systems that you can look up the price of your work. So when we have self-esteem issues of, I don't know what to ask for, especially in industries of freelancing, and when we're making up our own prices, like this whole high ticket sales bullshit, there is a market behind every industry that says that on this planet, this is how much this job title is worth. So I don't put up with either extreme. I don't put up with people who are pricing themselves way too high based on their own personal feelings. Or people who exploit others and say that, I don't think, you know, I'm so sorry, we just cannot afford it. Then don't hire people if you cannot.
Or then just hire entry level.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the thing.
Or don't make it, you know, it's, you have to understand that this is what it takes to make your dream into a reality.
Yeah.
And you cannot just live on favors for the rest of your life.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to hear what you said last time?
Yes.
So before I get carried away talking too much again, let me see. So last time when I asked you what you no longer put up with, you said emotional neediness from both sides, so yours and others. Yeah. Yeah.
Come a long way since then.
Look at that. I know. So Alex, such a pleasure to speak with you. Can you please tell us where people can find you and work with you? Give us all the good stuff.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. It has been such a pleasure. So if you want to look up who I am, the film industry has a website called IMDb. Everybody who's anybody in the industry is on it. So you can look me up on IMDb. But if you actually want to get in touch with me, just use Instagram. Probably that's the easiest way. My handle is Encrypt Eternity. But genuinely, if you just type in Alex Mill London, I come up.
So much. Thank you so much, Alex. Honestly, and please go check out Alex and check out her last episode, number 56 in March 2021. She really gives a lot of really good insights and golden nuggets. So thank you again, Alex. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Me too. See you.
And that's our episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend. It can be a screenshot that you text them, a link, the name of it, any of those will do. If you give a 5-star rating and a review, that really, really helps the algorithm for it to be shared on all the different platforms. And just a little note, please be aware that this podcast is always free to listen to. Any platforms that want to charge you for it are doing so without my consent, okay? This is free. You can listen to it on Apple, Spotify, all of the other regular listening platforms that don't charge you. This is free. So don't let someone charge you to listen to my podcast. Until next time.
Use an elf inappropriately.